What does poetry communicate? How could poetry teach us that we actually have six and not five senses? How can poetry illustrate the importance of that sixth sense, rhythm, in all our human communications? Poet Carol Durant visited WOOC Studios and shared her poetry and her ideas on why poetic communication is important. Here she is in a dialogue with WOOC correspondent Megan Roan.
We're here with Carol Durant. Carol is an accomplished local poet. Carol, could you say more about your biography in general?
Hi, Megan. Thanks to everybody here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media for having me. Hi, Mr. B.
Hello, how are you?
Great to see you.
Yeah, the WOOC family. And thank you so much for stopping by.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here and to meet both of you. And, of course, hello to Steve, Branda, and the rest of the staff. Shout out to Jim Welch for introducing me to Megan.
She's a fantastic human being.
I'm learning that right now.
Yeah. Mr. B is H. Bosch Jr., who's in the studio helping us to engineer. So, Carol, the focus of this segment with you is going to be on your poetry specifically, even though you do much more than just write poetry. So could you describe your life as a poet?
Certainly. The name of my book is Whole Fat. That's PHAT and gluten-free poetry. And the impetus of this entire work started when I woke up January 2017 and decided, I think I'm going to write a book. I focused on putting my poetry together in a targeted, task-oriented way. What I did was entered contests, did research about getting my words to paper. And by doing contests, I would at least be able to write to task. That gave me absolute enrichment because I had to write to task. I had to focus on what I was doing. And because I was able to do that, I amassed some work and a lot of it. So therefore, I didn't really realize how much I had until I woke up and decided, well, maybe I need to put this all together. So I did.
Yeah, so a fairly recent phenomenon.
Yes.
But you've been writing all of your life?
Intermittently. I don't know whether you would want to say all of my life with poetry. I wrote for people when they needed recommendations, when they needed someone to have a speech for a wedding. So, you know, intermittently. My friend Debbie Klauber, she owned Debbie's Kitchen in Albany. I wrote a poem for her business because I ate there all the time because I love food, which, again, is a passion. I'm with you, Mr. B. So,
all over the world.
Exactly. Poetry has been in my fabric, in my DNA. When my dad was alive, he would have us recite poetry on demand when we were young. So it's always been there lurking under the surface.
Did he make you memorize certain poems and poems from certain poets?
There was a series of volumes of poetry from famous poets. We could pick any poem that we wanted, but we would have to learn it and recite it on demand.
That's interesting. As someone who's worked in the classroom with kids, it's considered very old-fashioned to have students memorize poems, but it's actually been found that poetry memorization helps people to actually ingest poetic language. So would you say that that had an influence on you in terms of the way that you maybe walked around carrying some of these poems or recited certain fragments of language?
It definitely had an impact, unbeknownst to me, just with language and music, because you learn rhythm and you don't actually know that's what's happening to you. But as you're learning and reciting, it stays with you. Kudos to Dad, God rest his soul, but that's what he wanted. And that's what we, meaning my brother and I, we had to do it and we did it.
Poet Yusuf Kumanyaka says that rhythm in poetry is the sixth sense, that if poetic language is about capturing the five senses, that the sixth sense is the movement of the meter of the words towards the audience and that connector animal rhythm that makes us actually feel the meaning in the language. So who are some of your favorite poets and the people that you consider very influential?
Definitely James Baldwin, Maya Angelou, to use the historical icons. New icon that I actually met was Taihim Bejess. They honored him last year because he is the last year's Pulitzer Prize winner in poetry for Olio, which is, it's a huge masterpiece. If anybody out there doesn't know Olio, I'm just saying, I need to up my game because it is wonderful.
Olio is his book of poetry?
Yes.
How do you spell that?
O-L-I-O. The New York State Writers Institute at UAlbany had him giving a presentation about Olio. I happened to be in the right place at the right time and was able to read one of my works with current students before his actual presentation, which was completely amazing. Met him. He was amazing. Absolute highlight of an extraordinary year, 2017. So kudos to him and me and everybody who was there.
Now, you said with current students, are you talking about people who you're learning with, or are you a teacher?
Well, I'm alum of UAlbany. I was a life skills instructor for kids who are at risk. Unfortunately, the agency unfortunately closed, but it was one of the great learning environments because I learned as much from the kids as I hope they learn from me.
So what would you say inspires you in terms of the content of your work?
It could be, for example, I was sitting downstairs waiting for you, and I wrote a little something about Esperanza, who was staring at me. Esperanza is the dog. She is the watcher and the greeter here at the sanctuary. So I wrote a little something about her. And again, I certainly will impart that to you all in a little bit. But it could be just me being wherever I am. I've written on napkins. I write in the notes in my phone. If the feeling comes upon me, that's what I do.
Would you mind describing your writing process for us? I mean, you were just starting to describe that process, but you are a published poet now. So is there a process, especially in terms of the result of publication, in which you kind of write on your own in a more solipsistic, individual way and then edit your work for a book like Whole Fat and Gluten-Free Poetry?
I definitely self-edit. I write and amass a pile, and it absolutely is a pile. It could be, as I said, napkins, gum wrappers. It could be a pile of work. And then I take it and I self-edit. But thankfully, I have a great editor. He sits me down and we go over everything and make sure that it is indeed professional. I'm a comma splicer, make sure that my punctuation is not out of control, and make sure that, again, it's the words how I would like the presentation to be. So it's all-encompassing. So it does indeed, to your point, it does start with me being by myself. But, you know, I could be in a room full of people, and it's happening.
It seems like much of the content of your poetry, not in every poem, but much of the content has to do with the lives of women, or a few of your poems have to do specifically with either an external perspective on women and women navigating the world, or your own perspective as a person. So I just wanted to ask you about that, whether you consider that to be a particular curiosity that comes up within your writing.
It definitely was a happenstance. I can't say to you, well, I picked this particular lane and this is how it came to be. No, it happened that the points of view for women, I am a woman and that's where, you know, my lens is, but I didn't have a particular focus that I wanted to create and make sure that was in there. It all happened.
One of my favorite poems from your book is called Evicted, and would you mind reading that to us?
I actually picked that one today, and I was going to ask you what your favorite was because I was going to read it.
Excellent.
Okay. Don't bite the hand that feeds you and you. The faucet could get turned off and you have to fend to mend. Belly aches and no crumbs left out, detached. Shut your mouth and do what you're told. Your thoughts may be bold. But you have no ownership of your space and deal with the monthly rates and give your stacks to others to mac. Because you are a renter, and although no shame, I'm on the street in 7 days without boxes and a bunch of things. Where to go and what to do? I can't cry. I must act and do. I'm feeling fetal and feeble and need to rise and fight. Grab my phone and contact my peeps. That's been in my shoes. Loud cries, positive vibes, and plenty of leads and offers of food. Tomorrow may yield my new address and my next new space. temporary again, but not for long. Mission-focused, not cryptic. So my being will always be grounded, permanent, and never evicted.
Thank you so much for reading that.
Unfortunately, I know plenty of people who've been in the housing situation where it's just, it's tenuous. And it's tenuous only because, again, it comes down to money. It might come down to, you know, your job is moving and you can't move. I mean, everybody wants permanence. And when things are tenuous and you have money, so that's where evicted came from, just from the fact that we all should be helping people have some sense of permanence. And we all, in some ways, are going to be in that predicament. And it could be you're evicted from a relationship. You could be evicted from a friendship. You could be evicted just from yourself because you're not feeling permanent. There's people who can help you. Just make sure you do the outreach.
So do you do that within several of your poems? You take a very, you know, five senses world experience. I mean, something that really happens to people and then extrapolate it more metaphorically.
Unfortunately, I know people who have been in some of these situations all throughout the poems. And I just, you know, some of it has struck me just cold and warm. And it gave me the sense that I really needed to put this down so people knew that there are other people in the world who feel as you feel. Some people think they're crazy for having these thoughts. You're not crazy. They are thoughts that other people are having. They're overwhelming. But, you know, you can get a handle on anything and everything. But you need to know that there are people out there that are willing to help you. And we've all been burned in some way. But in my particular case, I want to be helpful. And me, with my third-degree burns and bandages, still willing to help. You should know that absolutely you are not alone. You are just not alone. Even if you're feeling alone, even if you're in a crowd, you are not alone.
Would you read us more of your work and something that would maybe, I don't know, keep going with that trajectory? All of your poetry seems to be about reminding people that they're not alone, communicating.
Certainly. Let's see. I also have Be Woke and I have Elixir. So I will do Elixir and then Be Woke. Elixir is towards the end of the page 34, for those of you who are following along or strive to purchase the book. Elixir. Stand in the light of love, not in the shade of negative evil. Smile, because that beat is moving your lips towards freedom. Bend toward those who catch your goodness with arms wide open. Dip your toes in the mud that made your friend cry, and rinse away their pain with a bear hug and a hula dance that makes them laugh. Remember those who can't hug you back or are unable to live in the real world. Enjoy the peace that you provide for someone who has despair. They don't realize their life can change if they care to pound fear into salt and soak their pain towards positive gain.
Thank you.
You are welcome. And, you know, it could be table salt, Epsom salt, but you need to soak it away.
I love that line, those who cannot live in the real world, which could be about a mental detachment, right, or the physical disembodiment. Mm-hmm.